I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code, a lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant, AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM. Let's create.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Summertime in Georgia. I'm not. I've been in Georgia since I was 12. And I tell you, the two things I like least in this world are humidity and boiled peanuts. So I don't know what I'm doing here for so long.
The first one is, you know, every man for himself. But boiled peanuts are good. You need to get your shit together.
Okay, I'll say I will say this for boiled peanuts and the people who love them out there. I can totally understand if you like boiled peanuts, if you're someone who would take, you know, a box from Amazon, soak it in some hot water, add a little bit of seawater for that salt. Actually, not seawater, because that's too much flavor.
You're just so salt.
Just salty, soggy cardboard.
Whatever, man. Have you ever had the Cajun style? Like, there's flavored boiled peanuts.
Sure. But it, your base is still something that is known for its crunchiness.
You know what? We're
made
gonna fight.
Soggy.
We're gonna fight. That's, everyone, give
this
us
the first big ridiculous romance fight
to have a fight about
on air right here. I'm ready. I'm not gonna give in on this one.
Well, at least it's something that doesn't really matter.
Well, some would say that it does. There's certain circles in which I will not express that opinion.
Very true. You could get harmed physically.
It's tough.
You know, I think the boiled peanuts were a natural evolution of the humidity problem. Everything is just a little wet, so you have to get used to liking it that way. And in fact, make it a virtue.
Let's lean into the fact that everything's a little hot and soggy around here and do it with nuts.
I mean, that's better than complaining about it 24/7.
Which,
make it a virtue.
Who are you talking about?
Hot and wet.
Who would do that? Well, summertime in Georgia. You know, we're making it. It's all right. We got a roof over our heads. Mm-hmm. Our air conditioning kind of works, and we've been in worse situations, so we're doing all right. We're just sweating a little bit.
Hopefully, same to y'all. Just a little sweat, but nothing too bad.
The problem is when we start recording, obviously, we have to turn off all the fans and the AC and everything for sound purposes. So, you know, being a podcaster, it's a tough life. It's pretty the conditions in which we work, I would say, not far off from like miners.
Oh, wow.
Or soldiers. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very trench-like.
Yeah, oh, very much so, I would say. Mm-hmm.
They're going to write an ode to us any day now.
Hang on. The third pillow under my ass is a little crooked, so let me just... Okay. I've got it.
That third pillow is really giving me that trench foot.
Just like coal miners is my point. So... Hey, everybody.
Hey, y'all. How's it going?
Welcome back to the show. So excited to have you.
As always.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. As I am always excited to have you.
It really is.
It's not like specific to this episode.
No, it's just very exciting.
Yeah.
To have people listening to any word you say.
Oh, my God. If you told...
At any time.
If you told 16-year-old me that people are just going to shut up and listen to you talk for an hour...
Oh, my God.
I'd be like, yeah, but do I have to share the mic with anybody?
Wow. 16-year-old you.
He'd be like, yeah, but... Yeah. He'd be like, yeah, but she's hot.
Oh.
And he'd be like, eh, all right. So,
what a ringing endorsement from 16-year-old Eli.
He didn't understand.
He didn't know.
It works out.
He didn't know me yet.
Yeah. No, he did not. He did not. He was dreaming of you.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm your dream girl.
Look, there's, you know that my dreams have a lot of girls.
Damn.
But you are the standout main character.
Aw, thanks, babe. I guess I'll take that.
Look.
Speaking of a lot of girls.
Speaking of a lot of girls.
We got our subject today also dreamed of many women.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah, we're finally getting to this. We got real sidetracked off this topic.
Right.
To tell you about Isaac Singer.
Right.
And his multiple families in New York. His like four or five families in New York and a million children.
We were going to tell the Winnaretta Singer story, and then you found her father, Isaac Singer.
Yes.
The creator of the Singer sewing machine.
That's right.
Check that episode out if you hadn't heard it yet, because it's a great predecessor to
really
this one.
It really is. But now it is time to get to our listener suggestion from Seth Batts at Seth Sculptures on IG of Winnaretta Singer. This was Isaac's 20th child that he had with his second actual real wife that he actually married, Isabella Boyer. And Winnaretta had two chaste marriages and multiple lesbian love affairs.
Ooh.
Besides using her fortune to fund and commission work from like now iconic musicians, painters, and writers.
Wow.
They wouldn't have been anything without her.
Wow, okay.
So let's get into Winnaretta Singer, who is also known as the Princess de Polignac.
Oui, let's go.
Hey there, friends, come listen well. Eli and Diana got some stories to tell. There's no matchmaking or romantic tips. It's just about ridiculous relationships. A lover might be any type of person at all. An abstract concept or a concrete wall. But if there's a story worth a second glance, we'll put it in our show, Ridiculous Romance.
A production of iHeartRadio.
Before we get into this, I think this is relevant. There was just this conversation on in like the theater world about whether or not, because somebody just got an EGOT designation,
yeah,
which is the Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, Tony designation.
Right, right.
They won the Tony just because they funded a Broadway show.
Right.
They were not in it or designed it in any way or creatively in control at all.
Okay.
Right. They just
okay.
funded it.
Sure.
So people are questioning whether or not that counts.
Gotcha.
Because they're like, all you did was pay for it. So you
right.
didn't really.
You're not a creator.
On the other hand, if there's no money,
yeah.
there's no project.
Right.
So there was kind of a big debate about that. And I think that's very relevant to Winnaretta's story.
I don't know if this funder had any input during the show, but
neither
they at least had the mind and impulse to say, this is the one, this will
right.
work. I'm choosing this show over others.
Yeah. And if there is something to be said for the eye of
yeah.
that's good.
Yeah.
Like, even if nobody else sees it, there's something there
yeah.
that I think will hit with people
right.
for whatever reason. So I don't know. That's just something I've been thinking about a lot since researching Winnaretta.
Since she is a money person for the arts.
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Well, I will say that if we really want to dig into this debate, I am willing for a wealthy producer to come in and fund some of our projects. And we will come back to y'all and give a full report.
We will let you
as
know.
To whether or not they deserve, you know, any sort of recognition for that. And I'll tell you right now, they do. So if you have a bunch of money and
That's
want
right.
some recognition for anything we do,
mm-hmm.
you know, shoot us an email.
That's right. Ridic
We're ready for you.
At gmail.com.
Yeah. Thanks to iHeartRadio for this one so far.
Uh-huh. Thanks. Yeah, but we're open to other sponsors.
We've got a lot more projects
oh,
ready
so
to
many
go.
Ideas. So
and
many
but
ideas.
The only thing we're missing is the money.
Yeah. We need a Winnaretta of our own. So Winnaretta Singer was born in Yonkers, New York in 1865.
Mm.
Now, after the Civil War ended, the Singer family moved to Paris until the outbreak of the Franco-Prussian War in 1870, and then they moved to Devonshire And Isaac bought the giant Old Way Mansion, and he built the wigwam on that estate. That's that building with like the fully equipped theater, where he had the full circus come through and all that stuff that we kind of talked about in the Isaac Singer episode. But that is where Winnaretta kind of grew up for the first part of her life.
Okay.
Pretty dope place for a kid to grow up. Then in 1875, Isaac Singer died. And we told you then, too, that his second wife, Isabella Boyer, remarried to a Dutch virtuoso violinist named Victor Rubsat in 1879.
Okay.
Now, this guy was the son of a shoemaker, but he pretended to be nobility because it helped him get gigs.
That's
remember,
he's
basically a con man for music gigs. But his fake nobility became real in 1881 when he was gifted the title of Duke de Camposelis.
Now, using Isabella's money, which, of course, she inherited when Isaac died, all that Singer-Sewer money, Victor collected rare stringed instruments, including this one called the Viewtomps Guarini del Gesù, which was built in 1741, and it's considered to be one of the finest violins ever made. I'm so fascinated by these individual instruments having names. It's like fantasy character swords.
Yes,
you know?
Totally.
Oh, this is Sting. This is Glamdring. This is the Viewtomps Guarini del Gesù. That's so cool that this one thing, you know, you could track its movement around the world.
Yeah, yeah. Have you ever seen The Red Violin?
I haven't seen it, but I remember that. Yeah.
I think it's about a Stradivarius, which is also like, it's the other best instrument ever, that one violin. But it's so funny to think about how these fine instruments, they're so good that you can't play them. Like, you're not supposed to ever touch them or play them, but they are apparently, like, sound amazing. So I'm like play something on it.
What's the point? It's like putting plastic on your furniture. Like,
exactly.
If you keep it, you're eliminating its purpose by keeping it pristine.
You keep all your action figures in the box?
Come on.
We gotta play games.
Well, this particular violin is now also one of the most expensive instruments in the world. It was last sold to an anonymous bidder for $16 million. I gotta say, it's smart to say anonymous because I got a problem with you if you dropped $16 million on one violin.
On a violin.
That you can't even touch. Come on.
Apparently, it's gifted to like this top violin player for her use for the rest of her life.
Wow.
That's why they bought it, I guess. I would be like, damn, I must be a damn fine violinist. They want me to play this or at least hold on to it because I don't think she's allowed to play it.
Victor and Isabella, they turned the grand salon of their Parisian mansion into a musical salon. And some of the best musicians of the day would come over and put on concerts right there. And they used to have those living room concerts.
Oh, yeah.
You know, 16 to 30 people would come in and sit down with their little fans and golf clap for the most beautiful music probably anyone's ever heard in Western culture.
Right.
Now, Winnaretta, of course, Isabella's daughter, the last daughter of Isabella and Isaac Singer, she never received a formal music education, but she was passionate about music, and she attended most of the concerts that her mom and stepdad held in this musical salon. Mm-hmm. And for her 13th birthday, she requested a performance of Beethoven's Opus 131 String Quartet as a gift. And that, my friends, is the gift of a child of privilege.
Okay.
Right?
I was like, 13?
Like, when I was 13, I wanted a $45 Lego set. And that was asking a lot, you know?
Well, she already had a pony, so
yeah.
But a lot of people point this out as like showing like what a musical mind she really had.
Sure.
Because I guess the Opus 131 or all of Beethoven's later work at the time was considered kind of incomprehensible to like the average listener. Like they were like, this is complicated and artistic.
Oh, wow.
So it's like a sign of what a great ear she had that she liked. This was her favorite quartet and she really liked it.
Or she was a show off and a music
like,
nerd. And she's like, actually, I like Beethoven's later stuff.
I mean, probably. She's like,
A lot of people think it's too complicated, but I prefer it.
Oh, you like Ode to Joy? Okay.
Cute. No, it's
so
fun.
So, a Fairweather fan, is what I'm hearing.
Fairweather Beethoven
fan. Fairweather Beethoven
fan. I love it.
Hey, they all had their heyday. But all was not well in the Rubsat home.
Oh, no.
Because many sources refer to Victor's quote-unquote violent behavior.
Oh.
Though not many details are given.
Okay.
So unclear if he just was like someone who shouted a lot, if he actually hit people, if there was any kind of sexual element.
Mm-hmm.
No details, just that he was kind of a violent man. But it seems safe to say that Winnaretta suffered some kind of abuse in this household because as soon as she came of age at 21 years old and was able to control her inheritance, she took her money and ran.
Yeah.
She got the fuck out of there. And fortunately, she could run as far as she wanted because Isaac Singer left her a little over $900,000, which is worth, let's see here, $24.8 million today.
Jeez.
She could really go anywhere she wanted.
I'd be happy enough if I had $900,000.
But it's actually worth
25 times that?
Seriously. Man, inflation's a bitch. Let me tell you.
Well, look. These rich teenage girls with their Beethoven quartets on their birthdays. And then just, here's $25 million. Jeez. All right.
Well, but even a woman of privilege had a limited life at this time.
Sure,
because,
sure.
When Winnaretta went to Paris, she set herself up. She bought this large hotel to live in. But she knew there was not really a place in society for an unmarried woman.
Oh, okay.
Okay? Yeah. She's just a maid, right? Nobody wants her around.
Right, right.
And she also didn't want just any old place in society. We're talking about a privileged woman here. She wanted to be part of the aristocratic society of Paris. Right. And that's kind of one thing that your money cannot buy you. Huh. Unless you, you know, give a large sum to the king or something that. But, you know, that's kind of an inherited thing. So she said, what do I got to do? I get it. Marriage. Boom. The solution to so many problems in the ridiculous romance universe. And so Winnaretta accepted the very first man to ask her to marry him. And that was a prince named Louis Wilfred d'Escay Montbéliard.
Wow, okay.
A lot of names.
Yeah, he's got enough names that you know he's important.
I can borrow one of these.
Yeah. But on their wedding night, according to Sylvia Cahan's biography of Winnaretta, which is called Music's Modern Muse, this guy entered his bride's bedroom only to find Winnaretta perched on top of the bureau, swinging an umbrella, yelling, quote, "If you touch me, I'll kill you."
Damn.
Which I'd be like, what? Okay, I'm sorry. I thought we were getting married here. I didn't realize I was under violent threat.
Said I do earlier today. Uh-huh.
I guess you do not.
I'm picturing him in like a frogged, you know, dressing gown.
Sure.
Feeling himself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now he's got a fight on his hands.
I finally married this beautiful woman. She said yes so quickly when I proposed to her.
I thought she was in love with me.
Oof. So, you know, kind of a inauspicious start to this blissful married life. But Winnaretta wasn't kidding here. She was a lesbian and she had zero interest in, you know, whatever Louis had going on under those dressing gowns. There's not really a lot of detail out there about Louis himself, but it's likely that the two of them led just completely separate lives.
Yeah.
Total marriage of, marriage of convenience.
Yeah.
But as she was now the princess de Montbéliard, she established her own first musical salon, and she hosted orchestral concerts as well as chamber music. And composers like Fauré or Chabrier or Dandy and more performed there at her own salon. And this helped them find fans and patrons. She also rented a palazzo in Venice and she sent Fauré there for a vacation. And that's where he started composing Cinq Mélodies de Venise. Now, Winnaretta also studied painting and she was very accomplished. She studied with Félix Barret and spent time in Édouard Manet's studio.
Wow.
Yeah. One of the greats.
Apparently, he never really took students. He only had one, like, formal student.
Oh,
but
really?
I guess she went to his studio and got tips, you know. But it wasn't anything like he took her under his wing or anything.
You can watch.
Yeah, right?
No questions.
You are lucky to be in my presence.
Can I audit that class, Edward?
One auditing of Manet's studio, please.
Well, in fact, Winnaretta did so well, she exhibited her work at the Chicago World's Fair in 1893.
Ooh.
But according to PalazzoCantorinipolignac.com, her paintings were even mistaken for Manet's.
Pretty good. She
really must have learned quite a bit from watching him. Mm-hmm. Funny story, some of my paintings have been misconstrued for Manet's.
Oh, wait a minute.
In the past.
Hang on.
Just,
you said Manet's.
Glob of white paint.
Gross.
It's deep. It's tangy.
Well, of course, this marriage could not last. All right. I'm sure old Louis, from the moment she started trying to swing an umbrella at him, was trying to get out of this.
Yeah.
So in 1892, the Vatican annulled the Sceaux-Montbéliard marriage since it had never been consummated. But, you know, we all know by now that society, especially at that point, hates a divorcee.
Right.
So Winnaretta kind of lost her place in society that she had been building so much. Particularly in the elevated circles that she'd been moving in, she was sort of a persona non grata. It was very scandalous to get divorced. So near the end of the year, her friends, Count Robert de Montesquieu, who is like a well-known dandy and aesthete, he was 100% the model for Marcel Proust's dandy, Baron de Charlus, in his book, In Search of Lost Time, or The Remembrance of Things Past, depending on which translation you see.
Right.
He might even have inspired Dorian Gray, Oscar Wilde's Dorian Gray.
No kidding.
But that's how well known of like a dandy he was. Everybody was like, this guy is really handsome, very effeminate, kind of mean, perfect. This is my guy.
Did he inspire Dorian Gray because he was like Paul Rudd and he just never seemed
to age?
He
never aged.
And so Oscar Wilde is like, man, this guy year after year, what's going on? Oscar Wilde's like, I bet there's a painting in a basement somewhere.
Hella pockmarked.
Yeah, it's
right
real
now.
Old.
Ravaged. Well, Count Robert de Montesquieu and his cousin, the Countess Elizabeth Greffuel, approached her urging Winnaretta to remarry. They were like, girl, all you got to do to get yourself reestablished is to find you a good man, right?
Okay.
And they even had the guy in mind. It was a friend of theirs named Prince Edmund de Polignac. Now, he's 20 years older than Winnaretta, but he had a lot to recommend himself as a husband.
Okay.
First of all, he's a prince.
Check.
So Winnaretta could have that title she's looking for.
Right,
stay
right.
Stay a princess. Secondly, he was broke. He had lost a lot of money on some get-rich-quick schemes, so he really needed a rich wife.
Oh, okay. So this
he'd
is
be
desperate
open
element
to this
here.
Idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, he would be open to it. Thirdly, and best of all, Edmund de Polignac was gay.
Oh, my God.
Count Robert may even have been a former lover of his.
Oh, the perfect husband.
The perfect husband.
Winnaretta's perfect husband is a lot different than most people. She's like, okay, he's a prince. A lot of people are good with that. And he's broke and he's gay. That's all three boxes I was looking for. Check, check, check.
A rich lesbian woman has a different checklist than most of us, I suppose.
Yeah, that's fair.
But yeah, Winnaretta could just put her umbrella away and relax, you know?
Yeah, he was not coming after her. So Winnaretta and Edmund were married in 1893 and she became the Princess de Polignac. And these two actually had an amazing marriage. Mm-hmm. Edmund was a talented composer. He'd actually won several prizes. And he was also very passionate about music and art and literature, just like Winnaretta. So they'd found really a kindred spirit. Like, aww. You know, you like art, I like art, you like music, I like music, you like people of your same sex, I like people of my same sex, like, this is great.
This is all working out so well.
So they ended up really kind of loving each other in that way, and they supported each other constantly. I mean, that's, you gotta say, that's a really good partnership.
Absolutely. People call it a bond of true love. Like, even though it's really platonic, like, they were truly in love with one another. Yeah. They got each other really well.
Amazing.
So this was kind of a masterpiece in matchmaking from Robert de Montesquieu. Great job, Robert.
I wonder if there's something there where, let's say they're out having their little flings, their little same-sex flings on the side or whatever.
Sure.
Is there still a little bit of jealousy? It's like, even though we're not sexually bonded, I just don't like you spending intimate time with someone else. You and I are we're a thing, right?
Listen, I don't think with these two, but yes, it definitely happened.
Yeah.
There's a few of her lovers that were married to gay men as well in like mariage blanc or lavender marriages, they were called a lot because they were each other's beards, essentially.
Right.
Where, they would get jealous of one another all the time, even though I'm not interested in what you got, but that's my wife or that's my husband.
Yeah.
And, you know, I still feel a sense of possession.
Interesting.
Very interesting.
People, I mean, jealousy is really complicated.
Yeah. We'll get into that a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. So Winnaretta produced Edmund's concerts multiple times. All of his compositions got to be heard. But the first thing they did was set up one of those, of course, incredible artistic salons in their Parisian music room, and they would debut performances of works for musicians like Debussy, Ravel, Fauré, and Chabrier. Just like huge names in French composition.
Right.
Beautiful little concerts.
I would totally go to one of these nights.
Oh, yeah, 100%. They also would have authors like Marcel Proust and, crossover alert, Oscar Wilde and Colette would come by all the time and give little readings of their works.
Hey, hey.
Amazing. Also, additional crossover alert, the Polignacs hosted our friend, BDSM connoisseur Percy Grainger.
That's right!
Who dedicated some of his folk song compositions to Winnaretta.
How crazy is this?
They all, I mean, like, go figure that all the same names are the ones that got written down and recorded, I mean, and were rich. It was a small circle of rich people.
I'm just saying, like, Belle Epoque Paris
sign
is
me up.
Insane.
Oh my God.
Like, the amount of people, American, British, and French that were all in these salons,
right,
ended up being amazing together is, yeah, like, pretty crazy. Apparently, Marcel Proust came to the salon because of Robert Montesquieu,
sure,
introduced him. And he got Marcel got a lot of his, like, observations of society that he became famous for writing in those salons.
No
so
kidding.
Kind of Winnaretta's salon was sort of his, like, what he was writing about.
Wow.
In fact, Marcel Proust wrote that before they had ever met in person, Winnaretta and Edmond de Polignac had bid against one another at an art auction,
oh,
trying to win a Monet, Claude Monet's Champ de Tulipes en Hollande.
Wow.
A beautiful painting of, yeah, tulips, I guess.
I mean, look, if you want a beautiful painting of tulips, you call Claude Monet.
That's
I tell
what
you
do.
That much.
Well, of course, you know, we already know Edmond was having money troubles. So, of course, Winnaretta won this art auction.
Yeah.
And at the time, Edmond was apparently enraged to have been outbid by an American woman.
Oh.
He was real snobby about it. But then he later joked, quote, I married the American and could look at the painting as often as I liked.
I wonder if that was like the cinch for him,
I know,
in
right?
this marriage. He's like, oh, it's a woman. I'm not into that. She likes music. Okay. She's rich. That's good. Mm. She's got my painting.
I know, right? That's probably, Robert was apparently like, hey, man, you should marry Winnaretta Singer, dude. Like,
right,
this will solve all your problems.
Yeah, she's
and
got your painting.
Say she's got that Monet. You can hang it right in your room.
I said, whatever I have to do to get that painting, I will. I will marry a woman.
In fact, also, Monet himself would hang out at the Polignac salon all the time.
Oh, sure.
So he also
course.
Became friends with the actual painter.
Oh, my God.
Pretty dope.
Yeah. That's better than just buying the painting.
He could, yeah, be like, drum me another tulip painting.
Well, yeah. Why buy the milk?
You can get the Monet for free.
You can get Monet for free.
For dinner. For the price of dinner.
Why buy the tulips when you can just befriend Claude Monet? It's the other version of that saying.
For real. Winnaretta also introduced Edmond de Polignac to Venice, because remember, she already liked going there.
Oh, sure.
And it soon became one of his favorite places. He particularly loved this palace on the Grand Canal. It was called the Palazzo Contarini dal Zaffo. And one day in 1900, they're having dinner with some rich friends, and he kind of saw it, you know, out of the corner of his eye. And he spontaneously exclaimed, quote, ah, that is the place to live in. We must manage to get it one way or another. And apparently, this kind of amazed Winnaretta because Edmond rarely asked for anything for himself. Like, he didn't really take advantage of this rich wife he had. So Winnaretta decided, you know what? I'm going to buy him that palazzo.
Aww.
That he likes so much. And it took her a few months of, like, real estate wrangling. We all know it takes a while to close on a house. But she got it, and it became the Palazzo Contarini Polignac.
What? I will say, I just looked it up. The Palazzo Contarini dal Zaffo, a.k.a. Contarini Polignac, it's beautiful.
It is beautiful.
Beautiful. I would totally buy it if I...
If I had the money.
If I was Winnaretta.
I know, right?
It's a private residence today still, apparently, for the Polignac family. And they do a frequent art events.
Mm-hmm. The foundation that she sets up,
yeah,
inherited it. So they do a lot of concerts.
Let's
there,
go.
I'm
Let's
ready.
Go.
We haven't been to Venice, though.
So no, we'll record
go.
An episode for that. Well, I've been to Venice on my study abroad. And wasn't my favorite.
Damn.
Sorry. Well, sadly, for a big tone shift here. Her husband, Edmond, had never really been in great health. Remember, he was 20 years older than her,
right,
as well. And he died just 7 months after she bought him the palazzo, shortly after his 67th birthday. And Winnaretta basically spent the rest of her life honoring him in the best way that she knew how. Artistic patronage,
yep,
leading to some of the most beloved artistic works of our time. And we have barely even scratched the surface on all of her lesbian love affairs.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to talk about that right after this break.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Welcome back, everybody.
Now, Winnaretta and Edmund both had affairs during their marriage.
Sure.
That was sort of part of the deal, right?
Yeah.
Was that we get to each do our own thing.
Yeah.
But most of Winnaretta's most famous relationships seem to have started after Edmund died.
Okay.
So I don't know why. Speculation station, maybe she felt like she could be more out and proud as a widow than as a married woman.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Maybe she's just a little more private about who and what, or mm-hmm. maybe they both just kind of went for people that weren't names, or
they're
I don't
just
know.
Like, they seem to really enjoy spending time together. Maybe they just devoted a lot of their time together and she wasn't that often
it
out there looking, you know?
Yeah.
Or she was just so busy with her art, she didn't have a lot of time for those flings.
Right, very true. That's what I was like, or maybe like he's, you know, such a shield in a way that like
yeah.
her female friendships weren't as remarked on.
Sure.
And then after he's gone, everyone's like, well, she's spending 10 years with this one lady.
Oh,
probably.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know for sure, mm-hmm. but just saying.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys, Winnaretta picked some amazing women to have affairs with.
Sure.
Like, of course, because her circle is incredible.
Yeah, right.
Just scratching the surface here. One of her lovers was Olga de Meyer, who was an artist, muse, and model. She was a champion fencer, and she was an opium addict. They were together from 1901 to 1905.
Quite a combo.
Uh-huh. She also had a relationship with the composer Ethel Smith in 1903. Big suffragist. She wrote like the suffragette anthem and was this amazing composer. She fell deeply in love with Winnaretta, started writing an opera about her. Winnaretta also had an affair with the painter Romain Brooks starting in 1905. And fans of our Colette series might remember Romain Brooks. We brought her up before because she had a 50-year menage with Natalie Clifford Barney, who's another famed Parisian lesbian. She was actually an American expat like Winnaretta.
Uh-huh.
She was a big proponent of non-monogamy.
Oh, yeah, I remember her.
And apparently Winnaretta did not like Natalie Clifford
Uh-oh.
Barney. I thought they would have been total broskies.
Too similar.
Winnaretta was like, acted like she didn't even know her sometimes.
Oh, rude.
She was like, I don't know that bitch.
Who's that?
So I think Winnaretta was a little more conservative than Natalie Clifford Barney. Natalie mm-hmm. Clifford Barney's like non-monogamy just set her apart, I think.
Because gotcha.
She was just like, there's no reason to tie yourself down or whatever. Even though Winnaretta's totally got a lot of overlap too. So
right,
I don't
right.
know. Winnaretta also had a fling with the pianist and singer Renata Borgatti in the early 1920s. The socialite Violet Trefusis for 10 years from 1923 to 1933. and the landscape expert and garden designer Al Veald Chaplin from 1938 to 1943. So big names.
A lot of big names.
And kind of long relationships, a lot of them. Well, they were together for a while.
And some people even say that she had an affair with author Virginia Woolf.
Mm-hmm.
Although some people think that they were just friends. And in fact, Virginia Woolf did throw some shade on Winnaretta at one point. She wrote to a friend, quote, "To look at her, you'd never think she ravished half the virgins in Paris."
Ooh. Ah, what'd you try to say?
She's like, she's not hot enough for all that.
Damn.
Virginia Woolf. Noted for her wicked burns, Virginia Woolf.
No one wants to be roasted by Virginia Woolf.
But look, I know we just rattled off a lot of like, and she did this, she did that. And you're like, but what? Tell me more.
I know.
But all these women were so accomplished and talented with so much story of their own that we're actually going to do a whole separate episode dedicated just to the lesbian lovers of Winnaretta Singer.
Every one of them is so cool, you guys.
Right. There really are. There's a ton of crossover. Some of these lesbians had affair with each other. Some of their gay husbands were having affairs with each other as well. Just a real spider web of relationships and stories. So stay tuned. You know, we've got a lot more to talk about with Winnaretta right here. But then next episode, we're going to go through all these individuals.
All these lovers.
Lovers.
And all their lovers.
Yes. Yeah, it's going to be chaos. But we will talk about one well-known story about Winnaretta. She was in Venice at one point, and she invited a married woman that she had a crush on to dinner. The husband of this woman, who had not been invited himself, got super jealous and drunk, and he came in and he pushed his way past the servants. And he was in the dining room and he yelled at Winnaretta, quote, "If you're half the man you pretend to be, come and fight a duel tomorrow at the Lido."
Damn, he said, "Fight me, bitch."
"For the honor of my wife." Then he threw a bunch of place settings and candlesticks into the Grand Canal. Then he got escorted out.
Of course.
All the items were recovered. I feel sorry for those divers, because the Venice Grand Canal is not one I'd want to swim in, that's
Hopefully
for sure.
Hopefully they're in a gondola with like a net, right. You know, like scooping out the candlesticks. But they had to be heavy, right? They must have dove to the bottom.
Oh, it was, yeah. That was a lot of work.
I'm sure she paid well for the
service. Oh, of course. Of course. So, you know, damage undone, mm-hmm. But surely a lot of gossip going around this story for months. Oh.
Seriously.
Did you hear what Vespucci did?
Vespucci?
Yeah, I don't know what his name was.
No one does. The woman is not named, so.
Yeah, she was like, "You keep my name out of the history books for this one."
No, but kiss and tell. But yeah, one of the gossips that was probably dining out in this story for a long time was Winnaretta's matchmaker, Count Robert de Montesquieu.
Oh.
Because after their marriage, Robert felt like he had done Edmund and Winnaretta a huge favor by getting them together.
Sure.
And he didn't think they showed enough gratitude for it.
He thought they
should be bowing and scraping a little more.
Where'd my finder's fee?
Exactly. Maybe paying for some shit that they don't want to pay for. He also claimed he was not invited to the wedding.
Oof.
Edmund de Polignac always said that was not true. Mm-hmm. He's like, none of that is true. But Robert basically broke off their friendship, and then he spent as much time as he could spreading rumors about the couple, and he would rag on Winnaretta for her nouveau riche background.
Oh, rude.
So just being kind of a bitch.
Mm-hmm.
So he probably loved this story and talked about it everywhere he went. Like, oh, did you hear the one about Winnaretta? She's probably still getting her candlesticks out of the Grand Canal.
Damn.
Also, this is something of a tangent, but it's such a fun story. Conspiracy lovers might be interested in
this. Oh, do you mean here's where it gets crazy?
Yes! This is where I want to do a crossover with stuff they don't want you to know.
Yes!
But in 1901, there were two women named Charlotte Anne Moberly and Eleanor Jourdain, and they went to visit the Petit Trianon, which is Marie Antoinette's palace, right?
At Versailles, yeah. Her own separate little quarters.
Right. And so they're wandering around in 1901, and they claimed that they actually traveled back in time or experienced a haunting, because they said they saw Marie Antoinette and members of her court and servants, like, doing stuff in the, and they said they described kind of a spooky vibe. So they published an account of this incident in 1911. It's now called the Moberly-Jourdain incident, and it caused a huge sensation. It was like the Bigfoot of its time, right? It was a big deal.
Yeah.
But it, like, captured imaginations all over the world.
Sure.
But in the 1960s, it was suggested that these two women had actually stumbled on one of Count Robert de Montesquieu's parties.
What?
Where his avant-garde friends dressed up and performed tableau vivant, or living pictures, in period costume. And the Marie Antoinette they saw may even have been a cross-dresser.
Oh my God.
And so they're like, these Edwardian spinsters seeing an avant-garde party would have probably seemed very spooky and surreal to them. So they... They actually just saw some gay party and freaked out and thought they traveled back in time.
They're probably tripping on mushrooms, too. I mean, that's like me walking into Dragon Con and being like, oh, my God, the ghosts from the future have come back. It's just like Star Trek.
Exactly. Klingons are real.
Posing for pictures with each other.
So that account was accepted, and there was no more publications
okay.
of theirs. Their story was allowed to be printed after that.
Gotcha. They put a stamp on it and said, no, this was one of his parties.
They're pretty sure that it's that.
That's incredible.
But I think that's incredible.
They were tripping so hard, they thought they were in, that they were being surrounded by ghosts. You wonder if they're like poking party guests and being like, are you real?
What?
Stop poking my face. A ghost.
I'm supposed to be posing right now. You're kind of ruining it. I do love too. They saw a man in a dress and they were like, haunting.
Well, anyway, let's get back to a Winnetta Singer.
Mm-hmm.
She is a widow now. She chose to show her love for Edmond de Polignac by supporting the artists and musicians that they had loved together. My poor, long-lost husband.
Mm-hmm.
Let me preserve his legacy here through art.
Right.
She created a fund for a yearly Wagner concert because Wagner had been Edmund's favorite composer. And in fact, for Edmund's funeral, she rented out this palazzo in Venice where the composer Wagner had frequently stayed. And she had musicians playing Wagner in his honor. And all the palazzo owners along the Grand Canal hung these banners in tribute to Edmund.
Yeah, I think that's nice.
That's beautiful.
It kind of shows, too, that Edmund, you know, it's really easy to kind of write off Edmund as, like, Winnetta's husband or whatever.
Yeah.
But he was clearly a very important
right.
member of this team. Like,
right.
he brought in as many artists as she did, you know, to their salon. He was as much of a connection point for all of these iconic people as she was. So
right.
it's just easy to forget that. But he actually had a lot of these contacts as well.
And I'll say, and I'm half joking, but half serious here. If you're someone with money looking to invest it somewhere mm-hmm. and you throw it into the next tech trend fad, you know, that can fizzle out.
Yep.
Business startup, whatever. Like you're trying to make a lot of money and maybe it works. But if you want your name celebrated in the streets
That's
long
right.
after you're dead and one day people, you know, give a podcast talking about how great you were,
mm-hmm.
you throw your money to artists.
That's right.
Right? And you support culture
Absolutely.
In your area. And, you know, people are going to celebrate you when you're alive and after your death.
Right. Because you're literally bankrolling beauty and expression
yeah.
and some things that people can't do without.
Things that
There's
last.
There's apps you can do without.
Things that last.
Things
you know?
That last.
Yeah.
Exactly. Not every artist is going to hit every time,
right.
but it's still worth your money.
Yep. No, every artist hits.
Hits.
You know, so give them money. Don't think about that. It's not about, well, I mean, and kind of seriously, it's not about whether or not it's successful. You're not investing like an investor, like, let me take a gamble on this artist and hope I make a ton of money.
Exactly.
Like, you're just, that's the thing with art is that it doesn't operate on the same commercial spectrum as every other business.
Right.
Its value is different than dollars, and it has tremendous value that's not woo-woo. It's not hippy-dippy. It's not ignorable. It's actually super important
right.
to literally every culture through history. Sorry.
Seriously.
Anyway, get your minds out of the bank for 1 minute, please, everybody. Oh my God, there'll be time for that later. Anyway,
mm-hmm.
Winnetta also created the Edmond de Polignac Prize for Writing, which was awarded annually to British authors. And she was a patron of people like Colette and Marcel Proust and Jean Cocteau, who is one of the leaders of the Surrealist and Dadaist movements,
mm-hmm.
and poets like Anna de Noailles and Paul Valéry.
That's right.
Huge
and
names.
Knowing that she knew Marcel Proust and Jean Cocteau, I can imagine, this is never written anywhere, but I can't imagine that she probably crossed paths at some point with Claude Cahun and Marcel Moore.
Oh,
I really
yeah.
hope so. I hope so.
Right.
But she might have been a little too, they might have been too out there for her. Because again, we found out she's a little more conservative than maybe her
yeah.
her life seems to be to
yeah.
us now. But I hope so. I think that would be cool.
That's cool.
If Claude was at one of the salons one day. Now, of course, Winterette is still bankrolling musicians. That's her favorite, right?
Right.
She was honoring Edmund de Polignac's memory by commissioning several compositions that are still well-loved today.
Oh, okay.
Including the opera Renard by Igor Stravinsky, concertos by Poulenc, Kurt Weill's Second Symphony, and Erik Satie's Socrate. She actually even intervened to keep Erik Satie out of jail while he was writing Socrate.
Oh, wow.
Like a libel suit was brought against him or something. Oh. She's like, hang on, let him finish this shit that I paid for already.
He's busy. He don't have time for jail. He's busy right now.
She's like, well, okay, here's the commission fee and here's for your bail.
Uh-huh.
And she kept up her weekly concerts at her house. She was hosting the first performances of many of these pieces, in addition to performances from names like the dancer Isadora Duncan, the composer Nadia Boulanger, Armand de Polignac, Cole Porter, Darius Milhaud. She also bankrolled Sergei Diaghilev's Ballet Russe on several occasions.
Wow.
And Sergei apparently got very jealous of the money that she spent on Stravinsky. He said, quote, Renard is just some scraps he found in his dresser drawer.
Wow. Man, artists are so petty.
They're so petty. I mean, this is another reason why it would be so fun to go, because you just like listen to these bitches complain about each other. Apparently, Sergei also went to another of his great supporters, who was Coco Chanel.
Oh, famed Nazi.
I know, famed Nazi sympathizer, Coco Chanel. And he told her that Winnaretta had given him 75,000 francs, but he was still broke and the Ballet Russe needed some support or whatever. And Chanel, speaking of petty, grabbed her checkbook and replied, quote, the Princess de Polignac is a grand American lady. I am only a seamstress. Here is 200,000.
Wow.
What a bitch.
Well, who am I? I'm just a poor seamstress. Here's more than double what she gave you.
You got to respect Diaghilev, though, because he knew exactly what to say.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Like, you knew he said that on purpose.
Uh-huh.
He's definitely. I didn't get enough from Winnaretta. Who can I know?
See, he's petty knows petty.
Petty knows petty.
So he knows it. He sees it and he uses it.
Let me fan the spite from Coco Chanel to fund my ballet.
Oh, my God. Well, also, if y'all like Vivaldi,
Vivaldi.
Four Seasons you're hearing now. In Winnaretta's time, Vivaldi was only well known to classical music connoisseurs. Ooh. It was a very particular, Vivaldi was the punk rock of his day.
Oh.
Like, you only knew if you were really in it.
Mm-hmm. If you were like into music,
right.
You got it.
But he actually might have faded into obscurity over time if it weren't for Winnaretta and her friend Olga Rudge. Olga Rudge was a violinist and actually Ezra Pound's long-term mistress.
Speaking of fascism.
And Olga was also a frequent collaborator with the pianist and singer Renata Borgatti, who we mentioned earlier.
Uh-huh.
Renata Borgatti had a fling with Winnaretta. More spiderweb here.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Now, according to Palazzo Quantorini, Polignac.com, Olga was researching early music in Dresden in the 1930s, and she found a pile of Vivaldi manuscripts, mostly violin concerti. And she transcribed these manuscripts. She brought them back to Venice. She was like, I think there's something here.
It's Vivaldi violins.
Uh-huh.
Hello.
And Winnaretta, like, yeah, this looks good to me, opened up her pocketbook for Olga and Ezra Pound to fund a publication of these works.
Mm-hmm.
Now, most of the work Olga discovered hadn't been played in the public for over 200 years.
Ooh.
So Winnaretta started to include them in her concerts. And of course, this just contributed to this overall revival of appreciation for Vivaldi. And now, every time a fancy rich people scene comes on a TV show,
what
you're
going
to hear this, right?
Exactly.
So it is synonymous with high culture.
Right? And how funny is it that Vivaldi needed a patron in his time,
uh-huh.
and then 200 years later, it required another wealthy person to keep his music relevant?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
like just to back to our conversation about EGOTs or whatever, uh-huh. the money really does matter.
It does.
It does.
It does. And again, it's
frustrating, but it does.
If you right now want to contribute to art, we will take your contributions. And if you are listening to this episode,
mm-hmm.
200 years from its publication date,
imagine
you can
that.
Still fund our work.
That's right.
You know, revive it.
Revive
Bring it back.
It.
Bring it back. And then find us. Use your future life rays to bring us back if
Ooh.
It's a good future. If
right.
it's not, Y'all can have it.
Yeah.
But if we fixed all these problems, love to see it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Bring
we'll
me back.
We'll freeze our brains or whatever.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. And
you can upload us.
We'll bring you more ancient art from the 21st century.
Yeah. It's vintage. Thank you
very
much.
Yeah.
But Winnaretta did not just spend her money on music and painting.
Sure.
However important that is.
Mm-hmm.
When the Great War broke out in 1914, when pretty much every nation was plunged into an economic depression after it, and during the Second World War, Winnaretta spent her money where she thought it was needed the most. On the poor.
Mm.
Imagine that. And we'll hear all about her public service right after this break.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code. A lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant, AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM. Let's create.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Welcome back, everybody.
So Winnaretta singer Polignac knew that a lot of people were not as lucky as she was in her financial situation. But instead of turning her back on them, she chose to help.
Look, here's a lesson in somebody who knows how to use their money right.
All right.
And I'll tell you what, she helped. She funded a ton of arts.
Mm-hmm.
She funded a ton of poor people. And you know what? She was still rich.
Hella rich.
You can still do it, rich
super
people.
Super comfortable. Yeah. She had no second mortgage on her palazzo,
right.
Okay?
She was doing all right. You can fund the arts and feed the poor and still be rich.
And still be hella comfortable. So in 1911, Winnaretta funded the building of a housing project for the working poor. And it actually became a model for future affordable public housing projects because Winnaretta included things like modern appliances, indoor plumbing. She made sure the building had a lot of natural light and safety features for children. Like she was thinking about human beings living there.
Yeah.
Instead of just like, let's make the most uncomfortable prison cell looking place,
right,
dank
right,
and dark that we
right.
can. Now, during the Great War, she went to all her rich friends and she's like, you ain't driving it. And she amassed a fleet of limousines that they all had. And she funded their conversion into ambulances and mobile radiology units with the guidance of none other than Madame Marie Curie.
Oh, my goodness.
So these limos end up rumbling to the front lines to help wounded soldiers.
Oh, my God.
Pretty cool.
Well, after the war, Winnaretta collaborated with another wealthy American expat, Consuela Vanderbilt, the Duchess of Marlborough. They constructed a 360-bed hospital in a suburb of Paris specifically to treat middle-class workers.
Hmm.
It's called the Foch Hospital, and it is still in operation today. In fact, it's rated the top hospital in France, especially if you need a kidney transplant.
Hmm.
So maybe one day I'll be swinging by there.
I know, right? I hope not. I was thinking of you, though.
Look, I just get kidney stones a lot.
It's true.
Probably partly because a particular period of my life where I almost exclusively drank energy drinks. So please, PSA for the day, get away from that poison.
It's not good
it's
for you.
It's the worst.
I very don't bad.
Think they're sponsors. I didn't say any names.
You didn't.
Well, this hospital also includes a nursing school. So a bunch of really great stuff happening here because of Winnaretta and Consuelo. She was also a patron of the scientist Edward Branly, who was the first person to invent a wireless telegraph.
Man.
Winnaretta also kept up her public housing projects. She commissioned the modern architect Le Corbusier to build or reconstruct several shelters for the homeless, as well as shelters for battered or abandoned women and children for Paris's Salvation Army. So just a lot of really good stuff. She's just like, I need to do good things.
I mean,
I've been leading a good life. I got a lot of money just handed to me, kind of, because my dad made a sewing machine.
Okay, like...
Time to start doing some good in the world.
Yeah, I love that she didn't turn her back on people like that.
Right.
She was like, I have all this money and no one to spend it on. Uh-huh. She didn't have kids of her own or anything like that. She's just like, what am I supposed to do but to make the world around me a better place?
Yeah. And then she's like, I done snatched up all the buildings on land that I can. So she bought a barge that Le Corbusier remodeled into a floating homeless shelter in the winter.
Oh.
So now it's like, not only can this, can I house the homeless on land, I can also do it on sea.
Listen, you got to use whatever space you got.
Right. And this also became a children's camp in the summer, and it was moored on the San River.
That's right. Apparently in like 2018, there were like historic rain there in France,
okay,
and it got brought on floodwaters, and so now that barge is at the bottom of the Seine.
Oh,
man. And they're trying to pull it back up. I don't know if they have or not.
Sure,
but
let's go.
It's very interesting that Le Corbusier was like, thought it was a really cool challenge.
Sure.
He was, you know, it's very limited space. You can't add on a lot to a barge.
Uh-huh.
So he's trying to fit as many beds in it as possible and stuff. So he probably really enjoyed that
so
commission,
cool,
which is kind of cool.
See, it could be fun to help people, too.
What a thing.
Just really into philanthropy this episode.
I know, right? Well, it's hard not to be inspired by Winnaretta.
Yeah.
If I had a lot of money, I hope I would be a Winnaretta.
Yeah,
winner.
Yeah. Let's find out.
Let's
if anybody
find
wants
out.
To give
if
us
anyone...
a lot of money, we'll show you what kind of people we are.
If you don't want to be a Winnaretta yourself, let me be Winnaretta with your money. Now, in 1939, when the Second World War broke out...
The sequel nobody wanted.
Exactly. A horrible sequel. Winnaretta was actually back in Devonshire because her younger brother had died.
Oh.
And because of travel embargoes and stuff like that, she never really got to return to her beloved Paris.
Sure.
But you know, our girl stayed active. She organized concerts and charitable events for the Red Cross. She made friends with big British music names of the day. Palazzo Contarini Polignac says that she frequently considered actually going home to America, but she just could not bring herself to get on a plane. She did not have the courage to get on an airplane.
Oh, yeah, sure, sure.
So in 1943, during a bombing in London in the Blitz, Winnaretta died of a heart attack at the age of 78.
Oh, man.
She was buried in the family crypt in Torquay, England. And the newspaper Le Figaro in Paris published her obituary a year later. And they kind of explained the gap in coverage. Writing, quote, the events and subjugation of free speech in France made it impossible to speak in a manner befitting the Princess Edmond de Polignac and the homage she deserves.
Oh, yeah.
It is impossible to write a chronicle of the 20th century without including the Salon on Avenue Henri Martin and the Palazzo on the Grand Canal.
Yeah, for real.
Which is so true. I think we talked about that a little in Colette as well.
Yeah.
Not that she died in 43, but that just, it was... Nobody could say anything because
yeah,
it was occupied France. So you couldn't really talk about all of the amazing homosexual people that
yeah,
made France so incredible and
yeah,
unique in
yeah,
the 20s.
I try not to get bogged down in it, but it's heartbreaking to me that she died in 43. France was liberated mm-hmm, in 44.
Right.
So she did not get to see and know that Paris was returned,
I know,
you know, that
yeah,
it was didn't stay. You know, you can only hope that, you know, I don't know, what kind of foresight do you have during a war to know what's going to happen at the end of it? But
I know, true.
But it is sad to me that she died while Paris was occupied by the worst people
mm-hmm.
of all time, you know.
Right?
So
I do wonder if she thought, will we ever get out of this? Was this ever ending? Is Germany going to win? I mean, 43 was a pretty low point.
Yeah. Yeah, but you can't see why it took them until after 44 to mm-hmm. be able to say anything about it. But I'm glad that they did loudly.
Yes.
You know, like they came out and were like, we didn't drop the ball on this, y'all. We got something to say.
Yeah.
You know, that's great. Now, today, Winnaretta's good work is still being carried on by the Foundation Singer Polignac that she had endowed in 1928, which they are dedicated to funding science, literature, the arts, culture, and French philanthropy through gifts and travel scholarships.
Hmm.
Now, the Foundation inherited Winnaretta's mansion, and they still hold concerts there today. They elevate the next generation of French music. Now,
I looked at the artists. They're no one I've heard of, but they
won't
seem
be. Yeah,
wonderful.
For a while, right?
Yeah, they seem very cool. A lot of trios and cool, like, classy, musicians of that nature. So,
now, look, Winnaretta, this is a woman, obviously, who had an incredible eye and ear for the unique, mm-hmm. you know, just stuff you hadn't really thought of much before. She wanted to put it front and center.
Yeah.
And the fact that she continues to shape arts and culture even after her death is pretty incredible. Right?
I mean, for real.
I mean, that's the thing is, like, part of that, like we were talking about earlier, funding the arts, it's going to have an impact long beyond your time here. Like, stuff mm-hmm. you don't even, it's like planting a tree mm-hmm. that you know you're never going to see at its full height, but you also know that it one day will be at that full height. And that's something special, I think.
And it's a special mind that can think of that. I think we talked about that with Olmsted, the park designer. Mm-hmm. He designed Central Park.
Yeah.
And also Piedmont Park here in Atlanta.
Yeah.
But he always talked about that. He's like, if you're a landscape architect, you're picturing a park that is full grown.
Yep.
But you're building a park that is new and it don't look like your mind's eye. And you might never see your mind's eye vision because it's supposed to be 50, 100 years from now.
Right.
Which I think just that kind of long-term vision is such a unique skill set. Like, I don't know. It's just a fascinating trait.
And not to harp on it, but it's so important.
Ugh,
this really idea, especially that, like, I don't know, if you have any sort of inkling about whether or not you have an existence after death, you know, and then does the state of the world matter to you in that existence, wherever you are, then you might want to consider, you know, also just consider what, you know, is happening to your name. Do you want to be the most hated person or a forgotten person or a person who is hundreds of years later being celebrated for the wonderful things they did.
And associated with so many, like, beautiful works of art. I mean, insanely beautiful compositions. I was listening to a lot of these. I'm not a classical music connoisseur by any means.
Right.
So I was like, who's Poulenc? Who's Erik Satie? And I listened to a lot of these while researching this. And they're all incredible. Like, of course they are. But, like, I don't know. It's just amazing to have that kind of heart and that kind of ear for those sorts of things and know what's going to touch people so intensely that we are still listening to Satie and still going to the Lincoln Center and stuff to hear the string quartet Opus 131 or whatever. Like, she knew what would stick.
And I think that's the thing too, is that we talk about funding a work of art and it's the work, or if you're saying, like, imagine, you know, being part of this one particular thing, but you also have to consider that art is like a string in a tapestry, right? Like, it is part of a larger culture.
Yeah.
And that culture we live in,
mm-hmm.
like, regardless. So each piece of art, right? And each conversation, each thing that happens is obviously part of the larger whole that we have to live in, how people are being influenced, what their behavior is like. You know, are you in a miserable hellhole or are you in kind of a golden age?
Yeah.
And that often comes from people supporting art with money.
There's
just, it's so, like Winnaretta's showing here, it's not hard to have a lot of money and spend a lot of money on stuff that's not a financial investment return, but it's a cultural investment return. The world you live in is better. And guess what? Most of the time, you still have a lot of money.
Yeah.
There aren't a lot of wealthy donors and patrons out there who are like, well, I used to be rich, but then I funded the arts. So now it's gone.
It's all
like,
gone.
There's plenty.
Uh-huh.
You got plenty.
In fact, the foundation that she endowed
uh-huh.
has no other funding source than her endowment. still today.
Wow.
Wow. So she had enough money that that foundation is going strong.
Yeah. Yeah.
For a very long time.
Incredible. Incredible. Yeah. And she never suffered for cash.
Not at all.
You know, not once. Just incredible. The American diplomat Morrill Cody said it best about Winnaretta. He said, quote, "Winnaretta Singer was the woman among us who decisively shaped and directed and nourished the social and artistic and literary life of the young."
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, again, just setting up the present and the future.
Yeah.
I think it's really amazing stuff. It's so absolutely vital to a healthy society.
Yeah.
Sorry, it just is.
100%.
We got tens of thousands of years of evidence to pull from.
So true.
So stop being dumb.
Spend your money on artists.
Georgia, the lowest arts funded state in the country. Throw some cash out there.
Started.
Make it work. I know we don't need to get you started.
We don't.
Miss Queen of the Nonprofits.
But I just, you know, I love too that she never commissioned Stravinsky or anything thinking, oh, this is going to hit.
Yeah.
She commissioned him because she liked it.
Yeah.
She thought it sounded good. And she's like, you know what? Hey, I write something else. I'm going to give you enough money that you don't have to work or run around or worry about your rent or whatever. All you need to be doing is working on your music. And same with Fauré when she gave him her palazzo in Venice for a minute.
She's like, go take a load
she's
off.
She's like, you're tired, man.
Yeah.
Like, go, which is the other thing that's so frustrating. Everyone's supposed to do art as their like hobby or second thing and like also be supporting their life.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And how many artists can't right now listening to this say, oh, if I just had time off where I don't have to worry about anything.
Yeah.
Not a pause because there's a pandemic going on, but rather like just a forced vacation.
Yeah.
Where all my whole thing is to sit and create.
Well, and again, even that, it's not really vacation because we talk about a lot, you know, you and I talk about how when you're creating, it often looks like time off and it's not, it's work.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it's time off if I'm just kicking back and being like, all right, later, I'm going to play some video games for a while. But sitting there with the blank page in a quiet space with some music on, you know, with a window by the sea or whatever, it doesn't even have to be that. That's work.
Right.
And it's hard work and it's frustrating work and it's challenging work. And also, I was going to say that she likely did that for lots of people whose names we don't know, too.
Nothing about. Exactly.
Because she didn't, it wasn't like everyone I fund is a hit.
Mm-hmm.
She was like, I'm throwing money out to a bunch of stuff. And some of these people are going to be really impressive.
Yeah.
Or
they're going to last as long as they last, like the Ballet Russe or something.
Right.
Like they're going to do whatever they can do in whatever time they have. And that's okay. Like they don't have to be, you know, still going on.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of artists exist within their own time with great importance and skill and, you know, incredible works.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all they are. And that's great too. Mm-hmm. Much needed.
Yeah.
And also to your point about just being able to go do your work without even worry about shit. Bob Dylan retired. He was like, I'm done making music. I'm going to go sit in a cabin by myself for a while. And he went there. He sat down and something like night two, he's like, once upon a time, you look so fine. Then there wasn't there. Didn't you? And he's like, wait a second. I got a song here. And he wrote like a Rolling Stone.
You're Bob Dylan.
Because he was just away. He just got to separate himself for a minute.
Yeah.
And he wrote like a Rolling Stone, like one of the most epic poems set to music of all time.
I really think that is what happened with Fauré. I think she was really like, you are burnt out. Go relax.
Yeah.
But while he's relaxing, he's inspired and regenerated.
Yeah.
And he's like in Venice. It's beautiful. There's music and art all around him.
Yep.
He's got something to be inspired by. He strolls by the canal every day, sees the gondolas. He's like thinking about something that strikes a chord. Next thing you know, you're writing Cinque Melodies, like, you know what I mean? Of Venice. Yep. Like, he couldn't have written that anywhere but Venice. So, I don't know. It's just something to be said about, like you said, a lot of creativity and creation can look like idleness.
Yeah.
Or, you're walking around looking at the freaking stars or nature or something. And it looks like you're just indulging yourself. And in a way, you are, because art is about taking in and reflecting and expressing. I mean, that is what it is. So if you lived in a little cave your whole life, what kind of art could you really make?
Yeah.
You have to go out and experience and react to things around you. And
exactly.
So I just love that she's straight up like, you know, Gabriel, you looking a little worn.
Yeah.
Let's just give you
go get yourself right.
A wonderful vacation.
Yeah.
And guess what happens? Mm-hmm. You're going to make something great. But even if he hadn't, that's not why she sent him.
Exactly. Exactly.
What I'm trying to say is I need a vacation and I will write Sunk Melody de Venice.
Look, and one last point here that I think is really important too. Once again, a massive cultural influence, mm-hmm. a massive period of history and a surge in cultural benefit that we owe all to the lesbians.
That's right.
You know,
that's right.
It just keeps happening.
That's right.
They're a great mm-hmm. people. And just the LGBT crowd in general, of course.
Amen.
Also very,
amen.
Very good at contributing to
very
culture.
Very true. Diaghilev, also a homosexual,
yep.
had plenty of homosexual yep. affairs as well.
So this one goes out to the lesbians.
This one is for the lesbians of
Thanks
Belle
again.
Epoque,
yeah.
Paris, and also today.
Yep. 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 Oh, what a great story.
I love Winnaretta.
And we've got more to tell of Winnaretta because we're going to get
so
into those
true.
Lesbian relationships
Yo.
More specifically next time.
I'm sorry, but everyone I looked up, I was just like, what?
Look,
they all have some crazy shit going on
yes.
with their romances. So we're going to try to condense them all into one episode.
tease. Stay uh-huh. tuned. It's coming back.
It's true. So got to say thanks again to Seth Batts at Seth Sculptures for this wonderful suggestion.
Yeah, definitely.
Because we got 3 episodes
yeah.
actually. And it's been really fun. So thank you so much to Seth. And if you have any suggestions or anything you'd like to say about Winnaretta or uh-huh. the show or us or just, you know, I don't know. If you have some bankroll and you want to give us some money for our next amazing project
yep.
or vacation
yep.
or whatever, please reach out. It's ridicromance@gmail.com.
That's right. Or you can find us on Instagram as well. I'm at Oh Great, It's Eli.
I'm at Dynamite Boom.
And follow the show at ridicromance.
Great. We yep. love hearing from y'all. It's always so wonderful.
Thanks for tuning in.
We love you.
Catch you next time.
Bye-bye. Bye.
So long, friends, it's time to go. Thanks for listening to our show. Tell your friends, neighbors, uncles, and aunts to listen to our show, Ridiculous Romance.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
You've probably heard a lot about electrified vehicles lately. Well, Toyota has electrified options for every lifestyle. We've got hybrids, no plug
All
needed.
Right, let's go.
But we also have plug-in hybrids, if that's your thing. You can even go 100% electric in the Toyota bZ4X. With so many options for reducing carbon emissions, Toyota is electrified, diversified. Learn more about our Beyond Zero vision for the future at toyota.com/beyondzero.